Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. It's your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor. And this week, we have Christina. Christina, why don't you introduce yourself?
First of all, thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited about our conversation. I will shorten my long story to hopefully the amount of time you want. But it started in childhood. I had a very traumatic childhood and verbally abusive father, not so much physically abusive, but very verbally abusive. So then when my husband and I were married early, 22 and 23, I came into the marriage with not very many coping skills, strategies, that kind of thing, as far as big life decisions, anything that might happen or go wrong. And when we were pretty newly married, we found out that we carried a very rare gene that made very sick babies. And so at the age of 25, I buried my first daughter at 3 days old. And then we subsequently had another daughter and a son that ended up having the same genetic disorder, and they passed away as well. All along the way there, I started having bouts of depression, anxiety, panic attacks. I didn't even know that they were panic attacks at the time. I figured that out later, but we did adopt. We were blessed to adopt twin girls that were born on Christmas Day, which was a miracle in itself. And then we later adopted our son, who was then diagnosed at the age of 4 on the autism spectrum, which changed the whole trajectory of our life. But I'll get to that in a second. So at the point where we adopted our son, our marriage had really started to suffer. And when you're faced with challenges just one after another, and you're always in crisis mode, I lived in survival mode for 20 years probably. And so I knew that we weren't as close as we could have been, but we had twins and then we had a newborn, and then, you know, all of the life starts happening. And so you don't really realize the gravity of the situation. But he would cheat on me, which I wasn't even aware of for a long time. And he didn't have to tell me, because by the time he told me, it had already been years later and the affair had been over. He had realized his mistake and all of that. So, but that was the turning point in my life that I realized I had not been taking care of myself. And so in turn, could not love him as a wife, could not love my kids as a mother, and really started turning that inward and working on me so that I could better care for them. I decided to go back to school to get my master's degree in occupational therapy because we were having a lot of trouble with our son and couldn't find services. We live in kind of a small town, and I would have had to drive for an hour and a half to get services, and we still had two small kids. Our girls were still small too. And so I said, I'm just going to go back to school and do this myself. And then right before, like a month and a half before I was scheduled to start school, I was diagnosed with cancer. So I had a tumor growing from the inside of my femur bone. No way of knowing how long it had been there, how fast it was growing. They thought it was chondrosarcoma, which is bone cancer. They ended up sending my cultures to Johns Hopkins, which is like the foremost leader in all things bone cancer, and they didn't have any idea what it was. So they ended up deeming it atypical borderline, but it had to come out. So I had to put my life on hold. I had a bone biopsy and I had a very extensive surgery where they cut a like a 6-inch hole in my femur bone, pulled out all the yuck, filled it with synthetic material, covered it with a plate and seven. And I now have a plate and seven screws that go from one side of the bone to the other. So I was still walking with a cane when I started school, but made it through 2 years of that and then went on for another year and a half to get my master's later down the road. But now my husband and I are totally reconciled. I mean, still have marital problems. Nobody's marriage is blissful, but it has brought me to where we are now, which is writing my book, trying to tell my story to help others, and just give people that encouragement that, no matter how many times you're knocked down, you can get back up, you can make tragedy beautiful, and you can help other people with what you've been through. So that's me in a very, very small nutshell. Lots of life.
Yes, lots and lots of life. So I have a lot of questions, and I want to start with the abuse. You mentioned that you didn't really have coping skills going into your marriage as a result of what you went through as a child. Can you describe what that looked like for you?
So I lived in fight or flight as a child. I never felt safe. I never felt like I had a place. I just always had that feeling that I was out of place, that I didn't belong. I wasn't allowed to speak my mind. I wasn't allowed to have an opinion. Nothing I did was ever good enough. And I love my dad. He's since passed away. And I did forgive him 2 weeks. It was only 2 weeks before he passed, which I'm very grateful for that. But he did the best he could. And I realize that now. He came sort of from the same parenting that he was now parenting me. And so I want to try to break that chain and change that going forward. But yeah, I don't even remember. I don't really have happy memories of childhood, I guess, put it that way. I have memories, but they're like flashes, and most of them are painful. You never knew which dad was coming home. If there was any kind of celebration, he was a yeller. And so he would yell and scream and, scare my friends, and nobody would want to come to my house. And it got to where we didn't even want to have birthday parties or Christmas or any of those things because we were just waiting for him to ruin it. So it was just kind of one of those childhoods.
Okay, I understand. So the next question I have is around your grief. To lose three children, first of all, what was the time frame with that loss for you?
So our first baby girl was born in 2002. We lost our second one 2003, the next year. I had a miscarriage after the first loss. So I had a miscarriage, and then the next year, 2003, we lost a second baby girl. Then we adopted the twins that same year. And then our son was born in 2008. So there was about a 4 year span in between the last two.
How did you manage this grief?
Oh, for a long time, I didn't manage it at all. That was the problem. My coping mechanism was eating. I would just, anytime I had a feeling, I would find a food that filled that need, what I thought was filling the need at the time. And so I gained a lot of weight, totally destroyed my gut, had a lot of health problems. I'm not totally convinced that's not when the tumor started growing because they couldn't tell me if it had always been there or not. I had a lot of trouble with that leg all my life. So I kind of suspect that maybe it was there from when I was a kid, but like I said, we don't know that. But yeah, I totally destroyed my gut. I ended up having leaking gut. I had fibromyalgia type symptoms. I used to joke that my nerves were literally shot, but my skin would often feel just like an open, raw, like it would burn all the time. I had a lot of pain through my shoulders, my upper back, my hips. Didn't sleep well. I was in a fog for a lot of my life, and I feel bad now because I don't remember a lot of my kids' childhood either. And I think that I became a yeller. But I realize now that whenever I was scared, or say one of the kids got hurt, or they got their feelings hurt at school, or something didn't go quite right, I immediately went to fear, which then came out in anger. And I didn't even realize for a long time that I was doing it. So it's crazy how you can go through life and just, but you don't even, it's almost like you're looking from your at yourself from the outside in. Like you're two different people. It's a very strange thing to experience.
You definitely disassociate during those long periods of survival mode, long periods of experiencing the residual impact of your trauma, right? So, like, you left home, you go into this marriage very early on, you have, you're experiencing great loss, multiple losses, on top of now introducing twins, which take I can't even imagine. I had two under two. I could not imagine having two at two. You know what I mean? Like that, just this is a lot. And then on top of that, you're dealing with health issues. You're dealing with lack of sleep. You're still having to manage all of the emotional baggage that has come as a result of what you've been through. And now you introduce Big C and I can't imagine the processing that you had to do in order to, first of all, be present in your treatment and all of that, plus on top of everything else that you've dealt with. Was there a period of time before the cancer that you had started dealing with your grief and the emotional baggage?
Yes, we had actually, my husband and I had started kind of on a health journey. And so we started taking supplements and we were trying to eat better and learn about what to eat and what not to eat. And I was trying to figure out, what was better for my body and inflammation. And I started working out. So we had started looking into all of that. And I had started realizing that I was eating my feelings. But still, at that point, I hadn't really figured out how to cope with that. I use my faith a lot too, so prayer, of course. And when I got the cancer diagnosis, I got very angry because I said, have I not been through enough? Like, I haven't had enough pain. I have emotional pain nonetheless. Now you got to give me physical pain. Like, is this what we're doing right now? So I was having those little pity parties, and I remember sort of a pivotal moment in that is I was in the shower, and I don't know if it's something about the water or just being by yourself and it's quiet and you're not thinking about anything else, but I was crying and carrying on and being a little baby and saying, why me and why now? And I can't do this. And I heard very clearly a voice say, this is what I've been preparing you for. And it just stopped me dead. And I said, okay. And I just had this peace wash over me that the surgery was going to hurt, obviously, but I was going to recover. Everything was going to be okay. I was going to go on to school and finish that path. And so I just knew that the things that I had done prior to that were leading me to this new challenge that I was about to face. So we tackled it from there.
I think that's incredibly powerful, though, because those who are faithful, and lean into their faith, that had to be comforting in a sense, like to remove the anger and say, like, there's purpose here, things will get better. So talk to us about your recovery with the cancer. Like, what did that look like for you, and how did you come out of that? I've heard a lot from people's experiences that it really changed the way that they looked at life and et cetera. Could you give us your version?
I'm just trying to think of where I want to start. I didn't have to go through any chemo or radiation or anything like that. I was very fortunate. So the plan, well, when we first went in and got the original diagnosis, the first words out of the doctor's mouth were amputation. He said, whenever I see, because he was a specialist and he worked with a lot of chondrosarcoma, a lot of bone cancer. And he said, when I see scans like this, it normally means amputation. And I said, well, we're not doing that. So let's have another plan. And luckily, we didn't have to do amputation because of the way that my cultures came back with atypical borderline. He said that we could do nothing and see if it grew. And we didn't think that was a very good option. And then he said, or what we decided to go with was him to cut the hole in the bone and replace it with the plate and screws. And so that's what we did. I had the bone biopsy. And then I'm trying to think, it was about 4 weeks later. There was only about a month in between the two surgeries. And so bone pain is a whole different pain than any other kind of pain I had experienced. I mean, I had pretty much natural childbirth with our first baby because it was sort of an emergency situation, and they just didn't have time to give me an epidural or any of those things. But that pain after the surgery was just indescribable. And I became not a fan of gravity. If you've ever had any kind of surgery, and when like your limb, you lower the limb and that gravity takes over, it is just like a jackhammer. I mean, on that limb, and it will just not let up. So I was wrapped from hip to toe for weeks on end. Couldn't even look at it or unwrap it or anything. Couldn't put any weight on it at all because they were afraid that the bone might break. They weren't sure of how strong it was. And the real crazy thing is that when I had started on my health journey, I was working out really hard. I was doing like boot camp style workouts and box jumps and leg pressing like 200 pounds. I mean, I was deadlifting. And as soon as that doctor saw my scan, he said, you have to get on a pair of crutches. You can't put weight on that leg at all anymore, because they were afraid that the bone would break and whatever was in there would spill out to my whole system. And then they didn't know what would happen from there. But so a lot of, I was on a walker for a pretty good while and then on a cane because it was almost like I had to learn how to walk again because I had been walking on one leg for so many months. And, you know, that leg is still smaller, like an inch and a half smaller than my other thigh. I do pretty much whatever I want. I don't walk with a limp or anything like that. The scar is really, it's just, I mean, it's a 6-inch scar, but if you don't look really close, you can't even tell that it's there. So the surgeon was really, really good. And so I pretty much do everything I want. I do have to modify a lot of things. You know, I can't lift as heavy with that leg, obviously. I have trouble stepping up. Sometimes I can't, you know, lift my body weight up onto things. I have to sort of push off with the other leg. But I mean, I'm very, very fortunate that I can do all the things. And it gave me perspective because, like, just this morning, Saturday is leg day, and it was a hard workout. And I just kept telling myself, you have a leg to stand on. Like, you get to do this. The, you know, there's a, it's, it just, it gives me a whole different perspective. And I'm thankful for that for sure, because sometimes without perspective, you don't think that way and you don't do things because, you know, I don't not do it just because I don't want to anymore. I remember how grateful I am that I could have had no leg. So.
Gratitude is amazingly beautiful when we can recognize that. So tell us about the journey to where you are now. You were essentially in survival mode for quite a bit of time. What triggered you to really like, this is, I want to live differently. And what did it take for you to get to that space?
I had been hearing sort of the whisper of write the book for it's been 10 years. And I just never thought that I could do something like that, you know, and now God is calling me to speak and, you know, do these types of things, share my story, podcast, all that kind of thing. And I never had, I guess I've always had courage, but I've never had the confidence to assert myself or to insert myself into those types of communities. And so that's what I found is I really needed community and connection and to get with people like yourself, beautiful souls that are like-minded and have a heart to give back. And so I've joined a mastermind and it's a beautiful community of purpose-driven women, all entrepreneurial spirit, and they never think anything's a bad idea. They always want you to go for the big goal, you know? So I had to make some hard decisions too on friendships. You know, we had a lot of friends that we just weren't aligned anymore. And it broke my heart to have to leave those relationships, but they weren't serving me anymore. And it was actually bringing me back to those places that I didn't, that I try was trying to move through. You know how when you get stuck in a place, and I realized that a lot of those friends were triggering those memories and those feelings and all of those things that I had moved past. I didn't want to go back there. So that's been really difficult. And I've found it hard to keep friends over the years because of my trauma, and I guess I could call them sort of like little quirks or probably really triggers is what they are. But, you know, I didn't like to go into commute big crowds of people. If you've ever had a panic attack, you know that it's like nothing you've ever experienced. And wherever you are, you have to leave there right then, or you are going to spontaneously combust. I mean,
Oh my God,
it's
a panic attack. The very first time I had a panic attack, I was in traffic on I-85 heading into
Oh
Atlanta,
no.
driving. I wasn't a passenger and I did not, I could, I, it was just horrible. I couldn't catch my breath. It was raining. It was just a
Oh.
horrible, horrible experience to the point where I literally had to pull over because I couldn't reconcile what was going on, and it
You think you're
then you're
dying.
even yeah you're even more fearful because like no, I'm operating this car. Like, oh my God, what is happening, right?
Yeah, it's very scary.
Absolutely. And I resonate with what you said about, having to let go of friends. I recently had an incident, right, where I found myself being triggered by this person. And we were really close. Like we would literally spend hours a day on WhatsApp exchanging messages, very, very long voice notes. But we had a conversation, and I was so highly triggered by what she said. And the level of the relationship was such that I could tell her how triggering it was. And then I was gaslit. And I was just like, you know what? I can't do this. Because, a huge part of my trauma and the experiences that I had were feeling as if my voice wasn't being heard, feeling as if I was intentionally being silenced, right? And there may be people in our lives that don't recognize how deeply or how widely our trauma has impacted us. And if we are in a place of awareness where we can actually communicate that and then still be dismissed, that is not somebody, I don't care how many years they have been in my life, that wasn't somebody that I knew could stay, and that it involves, like, you have friendships, you have acquaintances. Sometimes it may show up in the work that you're doing. Because I remember, my very last corporate role, I felt like I was being abused in that space, right? I was a foreign Black woman in a highly white dominated industry. I remember being called a little girl in a meeting. And I responded to that because one thing I don't do is take disrespect, right? So now I'm gonna let you know the non-corporate person, I'm gonna show you who I am. And my manager then told me I was the reason for the problems on the call that day. And I'm like, did you not hear him call me a little girl? What was I just supposed to dismiss that? And then there was this reconciliation. Why would I stay in this environment? Yes, it serves me because it's paying bills. However, at some point we have to choose ourselves, right? And I think that's one part of being able to exit survival mode is having awareness of what serves us and what doesn't serve us anymore. I think, so much growth happens when we can recognize something as simple as that, because most times we don't analyze our circumstances and the situations and the people around us, but we know that it's impacting us emotionally. We know that we're being triggered, right? So having the awareness and then having enough confidence in the decisions that I'm making that, like, I've had this awareness now and I have to make this decision, even though I'm not happy about it, but I can't keep placing myself in spaces that are going to take me backwards.
Well, I think that when you are living in survival mode, you don't have any, there's never a thought in your head that it's the other person. You always think that it's something you did. You weren't good enough. You weren't fast enough. You weren't strong enough. You weren't smart enough, whatever the situation you're in. So I think that's the difference is once you come out of that fog, you realize that the other people around you also have problems and trauma and triggers, and that sometimes it doesn't have anything at all to do with you, nothing to do with you. So, and I think that's what I had to come to terms with is that I just have to do what's best for me and support them whatever way I can, but I can't fix everybody. That was my thing. I was trying to fix everything and everybody because when I was a kid, I felt so helpless. And so when I got to be older, I wanted to help everybody. I wanted to fix everybody because I couldn't fix myself. So I think that's, oh, they're mowing the grass. I hope you can't hear that. But that's the real lesson that I learned, is that I had to fix me before I could ever think about helping anyone else.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, right? Because one of the things that I've learned about being in survival mode is it creates these personas, right? There's the perfectionist, there's the procrastinator, there's the people pleaser, there's the fixer, right? And sometimes we adapt multiple personas because of what we've been through. And to be able to shift that narrative and really start fixing yourself, it's so much freedom in that, right? Because then it's the ownership that wasn't there before. Oftentimes, people who are fixers are fixing everyone else because they don't have the strength to turn it inwards. They're not ready for that. So let me go find somebody else that's worse off than me. Let me go focus my energy here, which is oftentimes why people in survival mode, people who have had long periods of trauma, they end up in spaces where everyone around them is a project and it's not intentional. But it's the one thing they feel that they can control because everything else is chaos. So that's why you end up in these repeated patterns and these toxic kind of situations because you're seeking something that you can fix, that you can, put into a pretty box, all while everything else around you is falling apart.
Yeah, and I think that the reason that I was attracted to my husband is because we were both a little broken. He lost his sister in a she had a car accident when she was 16 years old and he was 18. And so he also came into our marriage with not processing that trauma, the loss of his sister. So then to then enter into losing your own children, it just his was compounded as well. But I think I always saw in him something that needed to be fixed. And that's why we were drawn to each other. But, and I truly believe that he's my soulmate. I mean, we complement each other in all the right ways, and we're a very good team. But I think that originally that's what I saw, that I thought that I could fix him.
We trauma bond so easily, and without any reconciliation of that. I've definitely recognized that in some of my relationships. It was just like, oh, you're effed up too. Come over here. You know what
But it's funny that you talk about all those personas, because I have all of those. And my procrastinator is strong right now. So that's the one that keeps holding on. The fixer, I have been able to cope with. What was the other one that you, though, the people pleaser, I'm definitely getting way better at that. I do not change my plans anymore for other people. I do not say that I like something if I don't, just because somebody else likes it. Like, I did all those things, you know what I mean? And now I'm like, no, I don't like that. I don't care if you like it, that's fine, but I don't like it. So, but it took me just that small things like that. It took me a long time to be able to have an opinion. I didn't know how to have an opinion. And I thought that if I had one, it was bad. Like, it didn't matter. So, but I do that procrastinator. It's a tough one. It's a
Listen,
tough
the
one.
whole thing, the whole process of accessing survival mode, taking radical ownership of our lives, actually thriving instead of just showing up and living on autopilot, it requires so much of us. And a lot of that is around the reprogramming that we have to do. We hold these narratives, we have these patterns and habits that, show up. We have these personas that we've adopted to keep us safe. And I've said this so many times. Our subconscious mind is our biggest op. Like, we can have the best intentions, and our subconscious mind is like, no, we're not doing that. And
You can't do that.
until you have the awareness, until you're in a place where you can really challenge the thought processes that you have, right? It is incredibly hard to do differently. We recycle 95% of our thought processes day to day. And if they're not challenged, we're literally holding on to processes from 1982. Like, what are we doing over here? So yeah, it is definitely hard, but there's so much freedom on the other side of it, You just have to
For
give
sure.
yourself a grace, some grace. At least you're not procrastinating and fixing anymore.
Or people pleasing.
Exactly. So give yourself some grace. It will come in time. Christina, I've enjoyed this conversation so much. Tell the audience how they can connect with you.
Thank you so much. I know that we're going to stay in touch. This has been amazing. And I'm so excited to hear all the other episodes of the podcast too.
Thank
I'm
you.
most active on Instagram, which is just Christina P. Simmons. Now, Christina is with no H, so CRISTINA, but I'm sure you'll have all that information. I'm on LinkedIn. I am working on my website. It's going to be ChristinaPSimmons.com. It's live, but it's still under construction. And then I'm hoping that my book is going to be out this summer. So I'm putting the finishing touches on the manuscripts, and I've picked a publisher, and I got to get started with all of that. And so yeah.
Exciting. So before we wrap it up, and yes, everything will be in the show notes. Before we wrap it up, one key takeaway for the audience.
You have to take care of yourself first. And that looks different for everybody. So you have to really figure out what it is that you need. And you have to be able to say out loud, I love myself, or say it in the mirror, I love you, because you're never going to be able to love anybody else if you can't say that to yourself.
So important. They tell us on every commercial flight, put that mask on yourself before you put it on anyone else. You have to learn how to take care of yourself. So thank you again, Christina, for your time. Thank you, listeners, for catching another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. And as always, I want you to remember you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.